All right. Welcome, everyone. We are delighted to be joined tonight by Alex from Washington. Alex is a returning citizen who knows the power of education firsthand. As a classroom teacher, he witnessed how various systems contribute to the injustice we call the school-to-prison pipeline. While incarcerated, his eyes were opened to the magnitude of the problem as he glimpsed the hidden curriculum of our public schools. Collectively, Alex's formal and informal education has taught him of our need to organize with, to advocate for our growing justice-involved community. He believes that together we will remove systems of oppression, promote healing for ourselves and our community, and ultimately change hearts and minds to form a more equitable world. And tonight, I think the topic of his conversation is going to be conflicts in messaging. So welcome, Alex. We're delighted to have you. Can he unmute himself, or do I have to unmute him?
Letting me. There we go. Thank you so much, Anne. Yes, my name is Alex Mayo, and I'm the executive director of Washington Voices. And I'd just like to start off by telling you a little bit about the history of Washington Voices. Washington Voices started off, like many of our organizations in Washington State, excuse me, across the country, as a group that was founded by people that have lived experience, and by parents, especially mothers, that have a loved one that has a sex offense conviction. And we started because there was a mother that lived in Oregon, and her son was had a conviction in Washington State. And the Oregon group that was called Oregon Voices, and still is Oregon Voices, was running strong, and she wanted to start something like that in Washington State. And the first few years of Washington Voices was very much just kind of an email listserv, so to speak. It was a whole bunch of names, email addresses on a list, and people would send out a message and everyone would get the message. And I have to say, as someone that has studied business and organizational structures, it's fine for a small group to run that way. But if you want to grow your organization, it's probably not the most effective thing to have every response go to every person. I'm not sure if anyone's ever experienced that, but maybe you've been the unwilling participant in a group chat on text message where someone decides, oh, I'm going to send out a message to a whole bunch of my friends and they will include 20 people. And you don't know who those people are. You know a couple of the people, but then all of a sudden your email is blowing up all day long and you are ready to have some words with your friend that has put you in that position. And that's kind of what a lot of our organizations across the country seem to be like, in my opinion. So in Washington State, we had this group. It was an email list. People sent responses back and forth. But every once in a while, people would get upset. Something would be said. Someone didn't agree with something. And people would drop out of the group. And about 3 years into the group's foundation, I was asked if I would consider coming in and helping the organization to grow. By that point, I had a reputation in Washington State for helping nonprofits, specifically nonprofits that dealt with some type of criminal justice reform, to grow, to become 501c3 nonprofits, and to start to do community organizing. And so the first few years, when I became involved with Washington Voices, I kept giving the same message time and time again. If we want to be successful, if we want to grow our organization, if we want to change laws, what we need to do is we need to hire someone full time. We need to send out consistent and clear messaging. And we need to work towards changing the laws in Olympia, which means that we need to understand the process of how laws are made. So civics. And at the time that I was asked to help, we had an executive director who I thought was going to become a paid executive director. And that individual had some life changes that happened. They moved on. Still with our organization, but becoming the executive director, the paid executive director, and doing that full time was not in the cards. And I was asked if I would take over, and I said the same thing that I'd been telling them for a couple of years: if you're going to hire me full time to do this work, then I will do it. And so on February 1st of 2022, I became a paid full-time executive director of Washington Voices, which is a little bit unique because most of the organizations across the country do not have paid staff members and they don't have a paid executive director. And so I think that is a little bit different about what we're doing out here in Washington. You might wonder about our association with NARSOL. NARSOL is part of the founding history of our organization, but in 2021, we made a decision to disassociate from NARSOL. And the reason that I tell people that we did that is because we want to be laser focused on the laws of Washington State. We don't want to be sidetracked with other things. As an organization, our primary goal is to change the laws in Washington State. Now, that doesn't mean as the paid executive director that I'm not involved in other things. Obviously, I'm here tonight and I'm involved with a lot of different organizations across the country. I think that that's healthy. I also think that what I'd like to see and what I'm hoping that each of you that is interested in changing things, I hope that you're going to be inspired to help the local state organizations to improve what they're doing and the tactics that they're using. So my theme tonight is communication. And I put something up behind me today. This is not my normal background. I'm going to change my background in just a second. But I happen to be, and does anyone know where this comes from, this clip behind me? I don't think people are allowed to go off mute, but maybe you can put it in the chat if you know where this is from.
We can't read all the words behind
it. Don't worry about the words.
That wouldn't help. Okay.
Just the picture. Does anyone have a clue? If not, that's okay. I don't want to wait too long. This is from The Godfather. Okay. And what you can't see because it is behind me is the phrase or the sentence, "We don't support expansion. We don't support training and conferences because it loses the intimate, productive, and dispassionate group of experts that the legislature was seeking when they created it in the first place." I realized that was completely out of context. I'm going to give you the context now. The context is that in 2023, Washington State passed a bill and made it into a law that's called Nothing About Us Without Us. And what that did was that put people with lived experiences on every single board in Washington State except. And I'm going to pause with the word except, because I think that most people that are on here will know what I'm going to say next, except for people with a sex offense conviction. And in Washington State, we have a board. It's called the Sex Offense Policy Board, Sex Offender Policy Board. And we use the word sex offense. We purposefully changed that word offender to offense. In fact, we've done it for so long over the last 2.5 years that the chair of the Public Safety Committee in the House of Representatives continues to call it the Sex Offense Policy Board when he's in meetings. And so we're very proud that we have kind of won that battle on communication. We kept communicating Sex Offense Policy Board, so that even the chair of the committee, quote, gets it wrong, but we think gets it right, by changing the name of the board. Now, what the board does in Washington State is different. Some states have something called a sex offense or sex offender management board, SOMB. This is not a management board. It is a policy board. What the board does is it is given questions, tasks by the state legislature, and is asked to consider the task or the assignment that it has been given. And the voting members of the board come together and discuss the issue and then make recommendations to the legislature. For the last 5 years, the board has had a policy that they have subcommittees, or they often have subcommittees, and people from the community are allowed to be on the subcommittee, but they are not allowed to speak or present or vote when the full board comes together. And last year, they decided that they would not have subcommittees. And this year, once again, they decided that they will not have subcommittees. So that's kind of the background about the fact that that when we were left out of the about nothing about us without us act, I proposed a new bill for this legislative session that was in January and February. We have a short session in Washington State, only lasts 2 months during the short session. So it was only in January and February. We presented a bill that would put someone with lived experience onto the SOPD, and it didn't go anywhere. And it didn't go anywhere in part because of an organization that's very powerful in Washington State that's called WASPIC, or the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. And the executive director of WASPIC got up to testify, and he said that he was not in favor of adding someone with lived experience. And so that quote, I'm going to read it for you again. He got up and said, "We do not support expansion. We do not support training and conferences because it loses the intimate, productive, and dispassionate group of experts that the legislature was seeking when they created it in the first place." And when I created this meme, I did so because I wanted to invoke what I thought of his comment, which is that he wanted the quote, smoke-filled backroom where dirty politics happens. And he doesn't want people with lived experience to know what's happening. And he wants to basically lean into his reasoning about why the laws should be the way that he thinks that they should be, and does not want others to provide counter narratives. And so tonight, when we talk about communication, I think it's really important to think about what is being communicated, how is it being communicated, and where is it being communicated? And so I'm going to go ahead and change my background to what I really like to have. It's my standard background. And this is our values of Washington Voices. And this is what I normally have up when I'm in meetings, because for Washington Voices, we believe that it is super important to, we think it's super important to always communicate our values in the work that we do. We are both, if you start in the upper left-hand corner of the screen, you'll see that we believe in abolition, but we also believe in prevention. We want those two things together because we believe that it's super important for us to talk about the fact that the registry does not do what it claims to do. It's not good policy. We've had more than 40 years to experience this policy, and it's time for us to get rid of it. One thing that's often asked of me by state legislatures, if you don't know about the politics of Washington State, you need to know that it leans very much towards the Democratic side of things. The eastern side of the state is more red, more Republican. The western side is extremely blue. And when it comes to the legislature, it's about 65 to 70% Democrats and about 30% Republicans. And it's been that way for a very long time. So when we go to the legislature with legislators, representatives and senators that are there to do the legislating, and we have some people in there that we consider friends or friendly to our topics, one question that often comes to me from these legislators is, well, you know, this sounds like a great idea, Alex, but what are other states doing? What are other states doing? That seems like a reasonable question. But what I like to point out to these friendly legislators is that Washington State was the state that led with creating three strikes laws. Washington State was the state that led with going to two strike laws. Washington State was the state that brought us civil commitment. Washington State was the state that brought us the registry. Washington State brought us the SRA, which is the Sentencing Reform Act of 1983, which went from an indeterminate sentence to a determinate sentence so that people knew exactly how much time they were doing in prison and they got earned time. And if they were behaving, they could get out during their, you know, at their minimum date because they've earned this time. And they decided to switch from that. So that's true for all crimes except for sex offenses. And we're going to give sex offenses an indeterminate sentence. And I like to say in Washington State that it's basically parole, but worse. because even with parole, you were given a date that you would go before the board to be considered for release. But with the ISRB and indeterminate sentencing, which they call in Washington State, get this, because they wanted to get rid of indeterminate sentencing in 1983. Then in 1994, I think it was 95, somewhere in that time frame, they decided that they were going to create these indeterminate sentences again. But because they had worked so hard to distance themselves from indeterminate sentences, they called this determinate plus sentencing. And determinate plus sentencing means it's an indeterminate sentencing, but instead of having a date that you're going to go before the board will get together and decide if they want to hear from you, and you don't get a guaranteed date. So it's your first earliest possibility that they will consider hearing from you on that minimum date. So it's definitely something that we're fighting against in Washington State. And so when we talk about the policies in Washington State, and when legislators come to us or we come to them and they come back at us and say, what are other states doing? I like to lean in to it's time to provide some leadership on this topic. It's time for you to provide the leadership that our Democratic Party did when they led the nation in three strikes and two strikes in creating the quote civil commitment, all of these things. It's time for you to take the leadership. Now that we have years of experience with those policies, we know that they don't do what they claimed to do. It's time for us to change it. So that's really part of what I wanted to say about communication. But the other part that I wanted to talk about tonight was the fact that all politics is local, which is part of the reason why in Washington Voices, we did not want to get sidetracked with national issues. We want to be laser focused on issues in Washington State. Some of you on here will know that you live in a state or you're associated with a state that has a lot of residency restrictions. In Washington State, that's not a big issue yet. We've kind of avoided that as something that's happened here in Washington. You know that if you've been paying attention, that Louisiana has just instituted physical castration. Florida has instituted the death penalty. These are things that in Washington State, we need to know about what's going on nationally because we need to be able to make sure that those things don't come to our state. But we also need to focus and prioritize the things that are going on in our state. So for us, the biggest thing that's going on is something called lifetime supervision. And I say the biggest, and I mean the biggest in terms of the massive impact. So if you are on the registry is horrible. The registry does not do what it claims to do, and it impacts your ability to get housing. It impacts your ability to get a job. It impacts your ability to travel around the country. It has many negative impacts. However, the registry, as bad as it is not supervision. So we have people in Washington State that have registry for life or what's called indeterminate, and there is a difference, and we'll talk about that. But we have people that are on supervision for life, and life does mean life. There is no pathway off of lifetime supervision. So you're either in prison. You're either in the community being supervised by the Department of Corrections, or you're dead. Those are the three options if you've been sentenced to lifetime supervision. How does that impact people? Well, we recently had one of our members have a loved one that died across the country. He was called by the doctor that notified him that his mom was not doing well, and that it would be good for him to come and visit her. He's been on supervision for about 15 years, and he was told by the Department of Corrections, oh, if you want to leave the state, you need a travel pass. And if you need a travel pass, you need to go to your treatment provider and ask the treatment provider for a safety plan. This individual had not been in treatment for more than 10 years. So in order for him to get permission to leave the state, He had to go find a new treatment provider. He had to create a safety plan. And of course, you know where this is going. By the time he was able to do those things, his mom had passed away. That is ridiculous. That is a terrible policy. And that is why in Washington State, it is at the top of our list of things that we have to change. We have to get rid of this lifetime supervision. The research is clear that supervision is helpful for 1 or 2 or even up to 3 years to help people that are coming out of prison to help provide some resources. But the research is also clear that it's the benefit goes quickly down and becomes negative, meaning that it is actually more harmful to the community and to public safety after a period of time. It's true after 5 years, after 10 years, after 15 years, and we have people that are on supervision until the day they die. This is not a good policy. That's why we're fighting it in Washington State, and that's why we need to have that as our priority in Washington State. I hope that makes sense. We have civil commitment. One thing I want to talk about is that we don't like that term civil commitment, but it's important. I want to make sure you know what I'm talking about. So I'm going to flip to talking about shadow prisons because that's what they are. It's important for us to, when we talk about our language, we need to be able to frame things. And so I want people to know what it is I'm talking about. If you haven't heard the term shadow prison, I want you to know that that's what I'm talking about is civil commitment. So in Washington State, you are in prison. You go into to this petition to leave prison, and they can start a process to put you into the shadow prison. So the shadow prison is not run by the Department of Corrections because it's not prison, it's treatment. And so we have an organization out here in Washington State called Disability Rights Washington, and they thankfully did a wonderful research study on what treatment looked like at the shadow prison. And what does it look like? It looked like the average person that was living on McNeil Island, which is our shadow prison out here, was given 1 hour or less of, quote, treatment each week. And Washington State Supreme Court ruled several years ago that this civil commitment was legal, but only if it was treatment. So how does that influence the politics of Washington State? So the first thing is that people have been getting off of the island. They weren't getting off, but for the last 10 years or so, we have had quite a few people that have actually been able to get out of the shadow prison, which I know is not true in many, many states. So I am sorry for that for you, but in Washington State, people are, many people, not everyone, but many people are starting to get off. And we have lawyers that are able to help with that. So that is something that's encouraging. What's discouraging is that what the legislators did, what the police chiefs did with WASPIC, what the prosecutors did is they said, aha, let's do something different and let's create this indefinite supervision, this lifetime supervision. So really the increase in indefinite sentencing, or what they call determinant plus sentencing, that sharply increased with the decrease of people that were legally allowed to be forced to live on the island. So that is part of what's going on here in Washington. It's still a huge issue, but the number of people that are committed to being forced to live there is decreasing. I know that there's a lot of questions going on in the chat, and I haven't been able to track with them.
That's all right. We can come back to them.
Okay.
Don't worry about them now. You finish all right. Whatever you talk about. We'll get to those later.
So basically, when I say that all politics is local, we are laser focused in Washington State on these situations. We know that we have to focus on this work. And the work that we're doing is going to look different than the work that someone else is doing in another state. Might be similar, but because our state is so blue, we can lean into some of these more progressive ideas than people in other states. But that doesn't mean that we're going to win every battle. Like I said, Democrats gave us three strikes and civil commitment and our registration, right? They gave us all these things here in Washington State. I know at some point I saw over there, like, when did registry start in Washington State? Registration fully started in 1990 in Washington State. So there was some movement prior to that. Some what some people call law enforcement only. It started to become public notification in 1990. So I do not like talking about private registries. I don't like talking about law enforcement only because it's still a registry. It's still law enforcement involvement with people that should not be tracked and harassed. So I don't think just because it's on a website or not on a website makes it it's certainly better if it's not on a website. So I want to acknowledge that, but it does not make it a better policy. I'd like to ask if anyone has questions.
My first question, which I just thought of, let's let Lila go first. I'll think about it while she's talking. Lila, you're up.
Lila.
I'm trying to unmute. Okay.
There you go.
Okay. I'm in Missouri and Kansas City. My son's in Springfield. We're moving to Seattle, Washington in October.
Oh, wow.
Lifetime supervision. He does not realize that he's not going to be able to travel. I've got an 89-year-old sister that wants to see him. He says, well, I'll be able to just fly and see her. And I'm thinking, I've told her she'll never see him again. He thinks that he'll be able to come back here. His dad and I live here. I don't think he'll be able to come back to our funeral. It's just, he doesn't realize what he's walking into. And he wants to be an activist. So he'll be contacting you.
Oh,
he'll
wonderful.
In any kind of way. He's a very good speaker and he's full of rage. He's been in the prison for nearly 8 years and he just will not calm down. So he's ready. I'm afraid he's going to be making whoever's going to supervise him. I hope they don't put him back in jail for him the way he's going to talk to him. I'm just scared to death. So anyway,
I want to know some more. So he's currently in prison and he's going to release and you're going to work on an interstate compact for him to come to Washington State.
He is just, I don't even know what you're talking about. He was sentenced up there. He's going back to there. He lived there and he's going to go back there.
Oh, he was sentenced in Washington State.
Yes,
so his crime was in Washington
yes,
State.
Yes.
Okay. And so he is under lifetime supervision?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we're fighting to change it. So yeah, I'd love for him to come out.
He'll help. His name's Greg. So
okay.
He'll probably be talking to you in October.
All right. And I put down in the chat, hello@lawvoices.org. That email is the best email to contact me at for purposes of joining. Because we have a team of people out here that helps me to maintain our membership list. And that email goes to several people.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, what I was going to ask was, this idea of having a police officer only registry.
Yeah.
I mean, can't the police look you up for anything that you did? Like, if I, whatever, wrecked my car or wrote graffiti, can't they pull that up anytime they want?
If they're asking about a particular person, they can look up that person's record. But what they can't do is they can't say who are all the people with a sex offense living in this neighborhood. So that's
right.
the reason that they want that. But but they can't do that without a registry. But there is no evidence that helps. There is evidence that is harmful.
Yeah, no, lots and lots. Kansas, in fact, has on their state website, they have so there's a law in Kansas that says no city in Kansas is allowed to make residency restrictions. And they have a long list of all the reasons. And each one of them is like, and here's where we got the information. This state did a survey and they found it. And they give a whole list of all the reasons why residency restrictions are nonsense. So not only do they not have rules, they make it so that no one can make such rules. Anyway, my original question was, the cops can always pull up your record.
Yeah.
And so the need to have a registry, basically having a registry just means that you have to then, for the rest of your life, you have to tell them when you move, right? And that's we've already shown that that's not helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, Jim. Sorry, go on and then I'll call on Jim.
Yeah. Okay, well, I was going to say, I'm seeing that Jim Z has his hand up, but I'm seeing in the chat that Jim S was talking about a registry in 1947. Yes, that registry was similar but different, but it is definitely part of the homophobic nature of all registries. And that registry started to break up and dissolve and become not as used until Washington State. Basically, it's like a wildfire where there is a hot spot and everyone thinks that the fire is out, and then all of a sudden it explodes. And that explosion of creating this modern day registry was in Washington State with the Community Notification Act of Community Protection Act of 1990 in Washington State. So that's where all of the other registries across the country stem from, is we are going to put people that have been convicted of a sex offense on this. So,
all right, Jim, you're up.
Jim Z is saying he can't unmute himself.
He's unmuted.
Okay, thank you. Now, when you register for getting free from the civil commitment place, this went through the courts, right? Did it go through the courts so that they became free?
I'm not fully understanding your question. So in Washington State, civil commitment is not done at all through the courts. So when someone is in prison, the Department of Corrections can basically petition and fill out paperwork to start a process, and then an organization called the ISRB does that. So, Once someone is, well, I take that back. Yes, a court has to sign off on the paperwork by the ISRB. So yes, there is a point where where a court can get involved. And in fact, there's a lawyer that I know that just was able to fight the state and was able to prevent someone from going into the shadow prison. But once you're there, it's difficult to get out. But it has been the courts that have helped us to get people out, which is why they went to this indeterminate sentencing model, where they're just basically saying, you know, well, we don't have to put people onto the shadow prison. We can basically just keep them in prison for life.
Well, there's different states who are trying to get them out through the courts. And my point is that a lot of these registrant laws has been abolished through the courts, and not the legislation. Like the residency restriction law has been abolished in New York State through the courts, not legislation. So I'm saying courts seem to have more power than the legislation to change the law.
I think that they have separate powers, and that if we want to abolish these bad laws, we need a lot of luck in the courts, and then we need to have a lot of grassroots advocacy to try to get legislators to change the laws. In Washington State, we helped pass a bill called House Bill 1394. What that bill did was it created a floor for who is able to be on the registry prior to July 1st of last year. We had 8-year-olds on the registry, and there's now a legal floor, so you cannot be put on a registry if you're younger than 14 or the crime was committed before age 14. We're working on that being retroactive. There are some people that because they had a conviction prior to their 14th birthday, they should be off of the registry. But because in Washington State, this is again why we have to be laser focused on our state. So in Washington Voices, we are laser focused on the laws of Washington. And in Washington, one of the laws we have is that it is a sex offense if you commit a failure to register an FTR. So you have an independent duty to register because of an FTR. So we have people that have a conviction from prior to their 14th birthday. They should be off, but they're sitting in jail or they are on the registry because they have an independent duty to register. So I hear you, Jim Z. I hear you.
They haven't gone to the court to just say this is unconstitutional or, you know, this is not right. So you, for that, you can't, you're not going through the legislature to change that, are you? Or are you doing both?
It's both. If the courts were as good as you seem to think, Jim, then we wouldn't have a registry at all, but we do. So there are some small victories across the country, including in Washington State, but there are not, I would say there have not been any major victories. So.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jim, for your question. All right, John, calling on you now. And I see, John, you have a question up in the chat. So hopefully you're going to ask that one.
I'm going to ask both of them and maybe a third one.
Oh, good.
Okay. I put in the chat, okay, it was not too long after my, if you will, troubles began to pile up on me that I was hearing a lot about so much god-awful messes that were coming out of Wenatchee, Washington.
Yeah.
And the question I put in the chat, let me reword it a little bit. What happened in Wenatchee?
Did it
have any influence? Did it have any effect?
It had a great influence on creating bad public policy. Mm-hmm. Those, we call those the Wenatchee witch trials.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people went to prison. Yeah.
Even when it came out that they had been falsely accused.
The question I have for you, John, is when someone is in prison with a conviction, how do they get out of prison?
That's similar.
They have a lawfully ordained sentence issued,
which frankly is very similar to what happened to me.
All right. So, you know, if that happened to you, then you know that it's very difficult to get a judge to take a case based on and give you a new trial. So, I'm certainly work with other organizations to deal with wrongful cases. But let me be clear: the work that we do is not to support people that are innocent. Mm-hmm. The work that we're doing is because we believe that the registry is wrong for all people. Period. End of story. So we don't want to hear about the reason why some people should be on a registry and some people shouldn't. We don't want to hear that. Because there is no evidence that it is good public policy for some people.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence is that it's not good public policy, period. Agreed. And if you're innocent, how much more is it wrong? It is so much more wrong if you're innocent. So we hope that people that identify as being innocent will support the work that we do.
Absolute 100% agreement. Yeah. Now, the second question I've got for you, you brought up fairly early in your talk about research.
Yeah.
That is something that I try to push very, very frequently, but in so many cases, running up into a brick wall because, here in Arkansas, it's get tough on crime. So in Washington State, how do you effectively get the results of, I'm putting it down, evidence-driven, peer-reviewed sex offense research? How do you get it to the lawmakers and how do you get them to pay attention?
Great question. All politics is local. You've got to get to know your lawmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And in Washington State, again, that's why I believe that every state needs to have their own strategy, needs to have their own organization that is working on the ground in that state. In Washington State, most of our legislators that identify as being a Democrat believe that they are believe in research. They believe in following scientific evidence, right? And people that identify as believing in scientific evidence and wanting to follow the science, it's easier to convince someone that has that perspective than someone that's a science denier. So if you live in a state where a lot of the representatives are people that don't trust science, you're going to have a different battle to fight. So in Washington state, we are very much about trying to convince the mostly Democrats that they need to follow the science. So yeah, I can imagine that in your state, it might be a different situation on the ground.
Whether it's in Washington or Arkansas or any other state, my last question for you.
Yeah.
From your point of view, how important is it to start building alliances with other criminal justice reform groups, victims' rights organizations, criminal justice reform, you know, across the board? How important is it?
It's essential. It's absolutely essential. So I work with Black-led organizations out here in Washington State. I work with groups that are the, you know, the Innocence Project. I work with Seattle Clemency Project that's working on clemency for people with long sentences. I work with people that are working on immigration law and fighting for people with immigration. We work with a lot of different people because the larger your coalition, the more likely that you are to get the changes that you want. And in addition to that, what I've noticed is that a lot of other organizations are biased against us. So when we look at Florida in the passage of Amendment 4, when they had a smoke-filled room, closed-door situation with Ron Book, and Ron Book worked a deal with Desmond Meade to get the voting rights for people that have a felony conviction, except for those people with a sex offense and for murder. You know, that is terrible. And I'd like to see people working with Desmond Meade, even if you don't like the fact that he did that horrible, terrible thing, because I think that we need to work with people that are on the ground doing things in this larger area of criminal justice or criminal legal system or whatever your local state's political word choice is. You need to work with those people and convince them that registries are wrong. Amen. And if you do that, then you're going to do better, because I have people making arguments for me when I'm not in the room. I have people calling me and saying, hey, this thing was said in this room that you weren't at today. And I have that because I network, network, network.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's essential. So just so you know, I didn't mention it today, but I'm a Just Leadership USA Fellow from 2020. I'm also a Dream.org Fellow from 2023. Both organizations are working on criminal justice reform across the country. And the reason I applied for both organizations is I wanted to make sure that someone with a sex offense conviction was in the room. I wanted to be able to talk to people that were doing other work across the country, whether it's on drug policy or any other type of policy.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Okay, Joanne, you got a question in the chat. Do you want to ask it yourself or shall I read it? Take that as I'm going to read it. Joanne says, there was a recent Washington State Supreme Court decision that was the impetus for the release of individuals from McNeil Island. Please share this information with the person who asked.
Oh, wait, what was that? Can you say it again, please? I didn't
track. There was a recent Washington State Supreme Court decision that was the impetus for the release of the individuals from McNeil Island. Please share this information with the person who asked.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Thanks. Was that from Galen?
That was from Joanne. It's one of the last things in the chat. Three up from the bottom of the chat.
Okay, great. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Jeannie has a question that she hasn't asked out loud. It says, I hear you talking about changing individual laws that would be helpful, but what is your strategy to abolish the SOR there? Other groups could benefit from hearing how to create that strategy.
Oh, yeah. So I think that within criminal justice reform, there are people that are abolitionists and there are people that are incrementalists. And a lot of times those two types of groups don't get along. And I'm a realist. So I'm an abolitionist because the policy is wrong. It's wrong for everybody and it should be abolished. And I don't have any problems using the word abolition. We need to abolish the registry. However, I'm also going to fight for bills that incrementally change and break down the system. So when we were able to pass a bill that got individuals that changed how old someone had to be on the registry, that was helpful. It was helpful for several reasons. One of the reasons it was helpful is because it required all local law enforcement in Washington state to create a procedure to automatically review every single person on their county registry and review whether or not they were still required to be on the registry. In Washington State, we do have a very small sliver of people that have lifetime registry. And those people are people that were sentenced to the shadow prison under an RCW, a law out here that is called 7109. So if you were civilly committed, if you were in the shadow prison, if you were found to be SVP, and I don't even want to say the full acronym, I'm not going to say it, but if you were so designated, then you have registration till you die. There is no way to get off. But apart from those individuals, it doesn't matter if you are, quote, level one, level two, level three in Washington State. If you are level one, two, or three in Washington State, but not so designated under 7109, then you may petition a court to be removed from the duty to register. If you have a Class C felony, it automatically ends after 10 years. If you have a Class B felony, it's 15 years of registration, but at 10 years, you may petition. And if you have a Class A felony, you may petition. It's called indefinite registration, but you may also petition at 10 years. So 10 years is a big mark in Washington State. If you have an out-of-state conviction, or you have a federal conviction, or if you have a tribal conviction, you have to wait 15 years. And the 15-year difference is because of federal law. And, you know, I wasn't there when they did that part, but basically they found a loophole. They wanted to make sure that people that had a conviction from out of state were in compliance. And they did that part of trying to be in compliance with federal guidelines. But, you know,
and I assume you're not in compliance with most of the federal guidelines.
We are not in compliance with most of the federal guidelines. That is correct.
As our, I don't remember the number, but it's a very few, it's a very small number. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Galen just put a quote in the chat that you are joining a panel on SO related policy at the NACDL State Advocacy Network Conference. It's free and open to the public.
Yeah, that's the NACDL, the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. And I'd love to see more people attend. It's free for everybody. It's not just for lawyers. So really? thank you, Galen, for putting that in the chat.
And you can attend the thing for free from anywhere, like on Zoom.
Yeah. It's a Zoom based event. So yes.
Oh.
I did want to do something really quickly while we have a little bit of lull in questions. I wanted to put on this hat for a reason. So first of all, I got to tip my head so you can see it, right? And I'm going to take it off. But, you know, you have to know your audience, right? Out here in Washington State, this hat is not going to go over well in progressive Democratic politics. But I can wear this if I chose to out in the public. But I need to be careful because I need to know all politics is local. People know me, even in my, you know, in my small community. When I go to Seattle, when I go to Olympia, people know me, right? So I have to be careful about what I wear. But I can wear that hat. There's nothing stopping me from wearing that hat, except that if I wear that hat, some people that are more towards the Democratic side of politics, more towards the progressive side of politics, they may not be happy and they may take some views about me for wearing a hat like that. But I could wear it. Now, I have a different hat right here. Can you see that hat? Now, can someone tell me, maybe put into the chat, why it would be a problem for someone out here in Washington State to wear that hat if they are on lifetime supervision? The second hat, not the first hat, the second hat. Anyone have a guess of why that's a problem? All right, I'm not saying anything, but if you feel like you have no idea, you're stumped. Okay. All right, so if you're in lifetime supervision, one of the common stipulations for being released to be in the community rather than being stuck in prison is that you have to have all these standard conditions. And one of the standard conditions is that you shall not possess anything that is used to attract children. So so the American flag cowboy hat is probably not going to be flagged, but the Pirates of the Caribbean pirate hat is probably going to be flagged as something that is not permitted. And so when we talk about how bad these laws are, Even though we don't have things like the residency restrictions, we've got stupid laws. And if you're on lifetime supervision and you have a hat like that, you might be going back to prison. And that's how stupid it is. Galen, that is right. It is so ridiculous. I did that for you, Galen. I thought about you and I had the hat sitting here.
All right. Because Jim asked the question in the chat, is the number of years, does that start when you get to Washington, or does that count from the time when you got out of prison?
If you're talking about registration, so you have a conviction from outside of Washington state and you come to Washington state, the number of years is 15 years. But the question is, does the number of years start from when you enter Washington state, or does it start from the day that you get out of prison and are on the registry in your other state? And we believe, but we haven't been able to prove it, that it actually would start from the day you got out of prison in your other state. So it'd be 15 years, because the law in Washington state does not say that you have to be in the community in Washington state. It just says you have to be in the community without a disqualifying event for 15 years. So we do have someone that's trying to test that theory. And in fact, they randomly texted me before we started this meeting. And I'm hoping that I'm going to hear from them some good news soon.
So really, the law doesn't specify?
It does not specify. It specifies if you have a Washington state conviction. It specifies if you have an out-of-state federal or tribal conviction that it's 15 years before you can petition. But it does not state it says 15 years in the community without a disqualifying event. And it does not say 15 years in a Washington state community before you can.
Right. It could be the community that you were living in before you moved here, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But failing to register is a disqualifying event. So you better be fully on the registry before you come here and get here and register on time.
Right.
We have
a Galen question.
Galen.
And someone's asking for your email in the chat.
I'm going to put the Wah Voices one again down. Yeah, Galen?
There he is.
I think you have to unmute him again.
I'm working on it. It
oh, okay.
Some weird thing just happened, and all of a sudden I have the whole... Okay, there we go.
Hey, Alex, your perspective is really encouraging, as always. So I have a two-pronged question. The first aspect is, did you follow the American Law Institute Model Penal Code reform efforts, and so that was including language on a registry in the Model Penal Code for the first time in the last, since 1964 when it was implemented. And then I have a follow-up question. Once you ask that,
okay. So yes, I've been following Model Penal Code, it's a little bit of a trap that you're putting me in, which I appreciate. But I think that there's a lot of reasons why we should not like the recommendations of the Model Penal Code. However, there is some reasons to support it, right? And so I have people in Washington Voices that both support it and people that don't support it. And so when it comes down to it, is following the Model Penal Code going to change the laws in Washington State? Remember, I'm laser focused on Washington State for Washington Voices. So if following it, is it going to make the condition for people better or worse? And in quite a few areas, it would make it better. But it's I certainly would like to see it be abolished and be a lot better. So what was your follow? Did that answer it? And do you have the follow up?
Yeah, it definitely answered it. I have a new follow-up now based on your response. And then one follow-up after that on a totally separate subject. So the follow-up about ALI is, from your perspective, interacting with elected officials, do you see a pathway to taking ALI's proposed model code language, which, eliminates a public registry, dramatically downsizes the number of people that are on the registry, and eliminates the lifetime registration requirement? Is anybody that's elected to office in Washington State actually going to do that anytime soon?
I think that the answer is absolutely yes, that there are individuals that mostly, again, you need to know that we are nonpartisan organization. We're 501c3, so we don't support individual candidates. But the ground game in Washington State is very much a Democratic game because of who makes up our legislature. And among the legislators that are here currently, there are quite a few that have been told about the study, told about the model penal code, and they are in favor of following some of those recommendations. So I would say yes, here in Washington State. For people that aren't familiar with ALI, ALI is this organization that tends to be a little bit more on the liberal progressive side of things. And so for that reason, there are a lot of legislators, especially people that are more conservative, maybe Republican, maybe something that follows that vein of politics, that discount the ALI for that reason. But in Washington State, a lot of the attorneys that are lawyers, that are legislators, they like the ALI. So that helps us here in Washington State. It may hurt someone in another state.
All right. So last question. How can we support the work you're doing on the ground in Washington?
Oh, gosh. I really love that question. I would love for people to sign up for my newsletter, hello@wavoices.org. Asking to join the community. If you send an email saying, I'd like to join the community, I will add you to my weekly email. And so you'll get a chance to see what we're doing. One of the things that I do is I try to start from a place of supporting people's humanity. That's one of our values that you can see behind me. And I think that people that have a conviction, people that have a loved one that have a conviction, people that that identify as victims or survivors, there's a lot of similarities, which is that people have trauma. And when as individuals, when we have trauma, the problem is that we get into a place where we don't feel like we can move forward. And so when we have a supportive community that comes together that supports us and helps to see that we can live our own best life, and I use that phrase at the end of each of my emails, I wish people the best life. And I do that for every person, regardless of who you are. I want to wish you the best life because I believe that even when we have these terrible situations that are going on in our life, we can find ways within that to live the best life that we can at that moment. It doesn't mean that there's not crap and terrible things going on. It just means that we can find things to rally around in our life to make our life better. You know, sometimes it's getting off the couch and going out and meeting someone. Sometimes it's not talking about sex offense convictions at all and going and playing board games with some friends. Sometimes it is about standing up to power and going and testifying and saying these things are wrong and here's why they're wrong. And that's going to look different for every person. So I think that if I would love to see more people take that approach in their states. So I would love people to join. And certainly we can always use financial donations. We are starting for the first time. We received a grant so that I will be traveling around the state of Washington, providing information for people in Washington on how to petition a court to be removed from the duty to register. And that grant funds me halfway. And we certainly could use more donations. So you can donate if you want to go to our website, and we donate through PayPal. I appreciate that question, Galen.
I remember you saying that after 10 years, you're automatically removed.
If you have a Class C felony, but what was going on in Washington State is that the sheriffs and police chiefs weren't actually going through their records, and people didn't, you know, people with convictions didn't know the law themselves. So they were free from the duty to register at 10 years, but they were never removed. They never sent. So if you were a Class C and you're supposed to be automatically removed, but the police were never doing it or very rarely doing it. And so then what we were telling people is that you needed to write a letter to the sheriff's department asking to be removed. And then you needed to basically get that paper that said, we have removed you. We verified that you've been removed. And so that's if you had a Class C. If you had a Class B, it's 15 years, but you can petition at 10. And again, people had done 15 years and not been removed. So you know, when we did this bill for juvenile registration, you know, how is that different than in Florida, where they banned, you know, they basically re-enfranchised everyone to vote except for people with a sex offense or a murder conviction? And I would say, here's the difference, is that we made the life better for a lot of people, but inside that law, we changed the way that things work on the registry, and we made it so that they were required to have a process to remove people. So,
okay. So my question was, you're automatically removed after 10 years if you're in this first category, and it's, you can apply after 15 years. But so I was going to ask you, like, if you waited the whole 15, would you be automatically removed? But the answer is, you're not automatically removed ever. You have to keep pushing them. Even though it says they're supposed to automatically remove you, they don't do it. Big surprise.
Yeah, and again, when we come back to what the law is and what was actually being done in practice, yeah, people weren't being removed. And then we know that there's people that were supposed to be removed that weren't removed, and then they get a failure to register because they assumed they were removed.
Yep.
And now they have another
they have
charge,
a new conviction. Yeah.
And it's considered a sex offense. And the yep. whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah. We had a guy here in Missouri who kind of got chosen. He was like, you know, you're awesome. We want you to apply to get off the registry. So he did. He applied to get off the registry. The judge said, yes, you can get off the registry. He waited a couple, I don't know, 6 months or something. And then he noticed that he was still on. So he reached out to the state highway patrol and said, hey, you know, here's my document that says you're supposed to take me off. How come I'm still on there? And their response was to sue, you know, basically to protest that. And now he's still on. So, yeah, what the law says and what actually gets done, I realize, is not always the same. Not surprising at all. June wants to know the name of your newsletter.
I just sent it to text, but
okay.
To sign up for my, it's called Washington Voices Finally Friday email, unless for something happens and it becomes a suddenly Saturday. Sometimes that happens, but rarely.
Yeah. Okay. Galen says there's absolutely a difference between reforms that move toward full liberation and changes that threaten to permanently enshrine discrimination against more marginalized categories of convictions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've talked a lot about, you know, that all politics is local politics, and we should all be working in our local communities. And that certainly, you know, many of our states have an organization that's working, you know, within the community, within that state. Women Against Registry is a national organization. So we can't really do that. Like no one can be expected to understand what's going on in every individual state. Yes, James M wants a copy.
Oh, you know, let me attach on to that. So yes, so Women Against Registry has members from all across the country. And so, you know, what I would encourage WAR to do, and people that come to your meeting, is to be able to collect, just like I do. I collect and I listen and I pay attention to what's going on. It's important for me to know what's going on in Louisiana. It's important for me to know what's going on in Florida. But my priority is focusing with a laser focus on Washington State. So, you know, and people in Washington State. So when I hear from someone that is in Washington State and they have a loved one that's about to release from a prison in Washington State, I try to reach out through the electronic mail system to the person while they're in prison and talk to them about what they need to do when they get out. But I'm not going to do that, or it's going to be very hard because I just don't have the capacity to do that from someone in Vermont.
Yeah.
So I'm not interested in that. It's not that I don't care. It's just that I need to be laser focused.
Yeah. I kind of feel like my role is just connecting people, you know, because we're a national organization. I get calls and emails from people all over the country. And I consider one of my big jobs is just to connect someone who's asking me a question to the person in their state that can help them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, not everybody can have as many, it's impossible to do everything in an individual basis like that.
I wanted to say something that I didn't mention earlier about kindness. And, you know, I think that everyone here can agree that politics today in the United States is not very kind. It's ugly. It's horrible. And if we want to do something different, it doesn't mean that we don't bring truth to power. It doesn't mean that we don't speak up. But one of the things that we can do is when we're talking to legislators, we can talk about the humanity and the impact of these laws on people and the reason why they should care about it. And you know, some people just don't care about other people, and that's who they are. And there's very little we can do about that. But I think that most people have some level of caring for other people that are not immediately related to them. And if you have this small modicum of caring, then what we need to do is to grow your heart larger like the Grinch. And so I just encourage you to do that. When we talk about why the registry's wrong, how about that, like in Washington State, we know that about 65% of all sex offense convictions are from a victim that is inside the family of the person that has the conviction. And when we talk about why the registry is bad and the damage that it causes, we can turn from the person that's caused the harm and has the conviction. We can turn right around to that victim who is now on the registry de facto because their loved one is on the registry. And so that is putting them in jeopardy and causes more harm to them. And yeah, that's not good.
That's absolutely right. So I had two things I want to say after that. One is next time in 2 weeks, the conversation we're going to have is with a friend of mine who we were just talking at a party, and he mentioned that something had happened within his family, you know, between two cousins. And his family, you know, basically all kind of chit-chatted about it and decided, yeah, we don't want to do that thing where we turn him in and they both have to, you know, feel rotten the rest of their lives over this thing that happened. So they just decided to manage it within their family and just rock, you know, they did a really great job. And I think, man, wouldn't it be better if everybody solved their problems the way that this family solved the problem? So trying really hard to get the aunt, you know, his aunt to come on and just talk about that. I thought they really did a good job on that.
I think that that's good to hear that perspective. I also want to warn that it would be good for the person to be anonymous, because it would be good for that person to come on and be anonymous when they come on, because many states have mandatory reporting laws. And knowing about CSA, which is childhood sexual abuse, and not reporting it can be.
Well, that is the truth. Even if it happened 20 years ago or whatever, doesn't matter.
Well, in Washington State, and you know, like I said, laser focus. Most states have statute of limitations. Washington State has no statute of limitation for civil or criminal.
Wow. All right. Well, I will double check that. Thank you. And then the second thing I wanted to mention was, you were talking about politics lately and just how totally divided it is. I'm going to put a thing in the chat about StoryCorps has this new thing called One Small Step, where they ask people a bunch of questions about where they are kind of on the political spectrum. And then they basically pair you up with someone on the other side of the aisle with a third party to like engage you in a conversation. And I just think it's a really great idea. And so I put that chat in there. I think we should all start doing that, because the country has gotten this situation where, you know, certain people only listen to these networks and they only talk to each other, and other people only listen to these networks and only talk to each other. We're both in our bubbles and we're hateful towards each other, even though in reality, you know, most of us are in the middle and we should be able to have conversations. We used to be able to have conversations.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, you're up. I don't know why I can't hit. There you go.
You can't mean?
Yeah, I was just curious. I was removed off the registry in my state, and I want to travel some. So can you really briefly, if I go to Washington, will I be required to register?
10 days. You've got 10 days.
So as long as I keep my vacation. So does that mean that, okay, if I go and don't have a permanent location, then does that 10 days count?
I'm not trying
to skirt the law, but
you can't come here and bounce around for 2 years. You're gonna get you may get caught, and if you do get caught, they're gonna charge you. And in Washington State, it can be up to 5 years in prison.
Okay, so if I went to Washington State, one, I don't stay longer than 10 days. So I'm assuming that partial days count as a full day?
Yes.
Okay, because that's pretty common, it seems like.
Yeah. I would say this is what I recommend to people. And the first thing I say is that I'm not a lawyer. You need to consult a lawyer. That's just the CYA, right, which is important these days. But sure. But the way that I approach it is I like to take road trips. I am not on lifetime supervision. A lot of people out here are on lifetime supervision. I'm not. So I'm no longer on what's called paper. So I can leave the state without telling anyone. When I leave the state, I know approximately where I'm going to go. And I know the general regulations of the states that I'm going to go to. And I make sure that if I can, I stay within a state for only 1 to 2 days, regardless of what their policy is. You know, unless for some reason their policy is that you have to register less than a day, which if people don't know, if you go to Alaska, you're supposed to notify them 24 hours before you arrive. So I wouldn't recommend going to Alaska. I don't recommend going to Florida. There's some states I don't recommend going to. But I have gone to Texas and spent a few, you know, up to 10 days there. As long as you're traveling around, I am in my comfort zone. Catherine stay out of Louisiana. I have put my head into Louisiana, but I did not stay the night. So, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, to kind of sum it up, I need to either do my research online or call the state registry office of any state that I'm traveling through.
Yes, you need to do your research. And, you know, there is not a, you know, like in Washington State, there is not a thing called a state registry office. So you can't call a registry office in Washington State. If you wanted to come to Washington and you wanted to talk to someone that was in charge of registration, you'd have to call every county sheriff of every county that you were going to go to, because that's who's in charge in Washington State. Again, these laws are terrible and they're a patchwork across the country and they're similar, but not the same. And, you know, in Washington State, there is no problem if you're on the registry to go to a ball, to like a ball game at a major league event, but you better not go to the Little League game, right? But I'm worried about going to Georgia and going to a football game. I would be very concerned about going to Georgia and going to a football game. So, you know, it really depends.
It sounds like it goes back to the, you know, CYA situation. Yep. Every state you need to know. So, okay, the scenario changed it a little bit. I stay over 10 days and I register. Is there a path off of the registry in Washington State?
Washington State does not keep you on if you leave. So you're going to be removed when you leave, but you have to notify them that you've left. If you come in and register and then just leave and don't tell them, they could theoretically put out a warrant for you to have you arrested.
Okay. Yeah. I'll wrap it up here. I have found in my experience that even though, you know, I was successful with my petition, all I actually did was expand my, what I call my prison borders,
yeah,
to the state that I currently reside in. But I've learned that once I leave the state, I all of a sudden become that dangerous, and we're not supposed to use this, I become that dangerous sex offender.
Yeah.
You know, so... Thanks for answering that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's what I needed to know.
Mike, did you see the war room where we had the two travel guys come on?
Was that A to Z?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I actually roomed with him in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
So I do have his website and contact.
Okay, it was him, and then there was a guy who talked about international travel. Anyway, if you're interested, I could send you that. That's on our website, and I could send you that link.
Okay, if you want to, I can definitely store it, but
okay.
You know, currently it's we it's currently not necessarily right now.
Got it. All right, Beverly.
Yeah, thanks for your passion in this. I mean, it's amazing. My thought was about when you are trying to work with other groups and they say, well, we don't want to work with you guys. You know, what's in it for us? Can we say that these laws are entrapping people? So eventually you are going to have people in your community, in your group, that are going to need this, that are going to be affected by this, you know?
I think that it's important when you're dealing with other people that maybe are favorable to changing things with criminal justice, but have a bias against sex offense, because they buy into this idea of sex exceptionalism, which is completely bogus, but it is something.
What is that?
It's the idea that sex offenses are on a completely different level of crime than other crimes.
So
murders and arson and theft, you know, they're all kind of one category and maybe different levels of harm, but then sex offenses are completely way out in outer space. And so it's a completely separate thing. And, you know, someone might be able to recover from having a loved one murdered, but they will never recover from having a loved one harmed sexually, or they will never recover from being harmed sexually. And it's not true. There's a lot of people that recover from sexual harm. And when we buy into that, then we bought into that sex offense registries are okay. And they're not. It's not true. There are lots of examples, but you know, the deal is that most people that have experienced sexual harm, they don't want to talk about it, right? And so that's the challenge is we're constantly working on building up allies that have identified as being a survivor. And we're working on supporting them. I'm working on trying to get some funding to provide counseling services, because one of the things that we found when we found people that are willing to testify as a survivor, they get people that start talking to them randomly about what they've talked about. And so, you know, they might be in the middle of work or the middle of church or the middle of the grocery store, and someone walks up to them and starts talking to them about this. And how awful and sick and gross is that? But, you know, if we're going to ask people that are survivors to find the courage to step up because they know it's right that these laws are wrong, then we need to be able to help support them through the harm that is caused by it. So, you know, that's something that we're working on here out here in Washington, is that there are several organizations of survivors that are working on getting healing services for people that are going to be advocates, and we support that work.
Okay, because this is what's been going through my mind and making a lot of things a challenge for me is that in trying to talk about it, you know, you're in a community that is so totally shunned and not wanted and everything, that, you know, just even bringing it up and nobody wants to have empathy. No one wants to, but if you start looking into it about, you know, everybody's charges seems to be different. Everybody's path seems to be different in this thing. And I get very mixed up in my mind about how to think about it, how to talk about it. And sometimes I just don't do a very good job. It sounds good in my mind, but when I start to say stuff, and I don't really say it a whole lot, especially to people who don't know. But for people who do know, like my therapist, my pastor, when I start talking about it, they kind of like look at me like, what are you saying? Are you saying that, you know, everybody should get off scot-free? And I'm going, no, not really. But I mean, can you not see that this thing that happens to people because of whatever you know, is whatever their situation is, that it's meant to put them down. I don't know how to advocate. And you do such a good job, but I'm just not there yet. So.
I would say, you know, one of the things I thought about starting my presentation with is asking everybody, you know, what do you know about Seattle? Because if we start asking people on here, there's probably a few people that do know about Seattle, but probably many people have some ideas, but they're probably maybe not actually correct about Seattle. So one thing that's very true about Seattle is it's very unchurched. So very few people go to church out here. Yeah. And so I know across the country, especially when you get into the Midwest and the South and what we call the Bible Belt, that like everybody goes to church, right? And so if I were in an area where everyone goes to church, I would be having different discussions than I have out here. I would be talking to pastors, and I would be talking to pastors very blatantly and openly about the fact that, especially if it's a quote Christian church, I would be talking about what does it look like to seek forgiveness, and I would be talking about that within the church, and I would say, you know, it's not okay to jump on a bandwagon because politically it's favorable to be anti-sex offender. It's okay to cause ostracism from people that have this conviction. It is okay to say, look, we're not going to accept abuse in our church. We should be talking about what are we doing to prevent. That's one of the values that's listed behind me is prevention. What are we doing to prevent sexual harm? But when sexual harm happens, what is our response to it? Is it with humanity? Is it with humanity for the person that's caused harm and for the person that has experienced the harm? Right?
And that's
I think that a lot of churches, the reason why they've gotten into trouble so much over the last, 10 years or so is because they haven't wanted to talk about it. And then they don't talk about it. And then they hide it. And then, you know, it gets into a cycle that's very destructive and does not help with prevention and causes harm. It causes much greater harm.
Much greater. Okay. Well, thank you. I vented a little bit there to you, and I'm very glad you took it at that. Thanks so much, Alex.
You're welcome.
Beverly, I just put a link in the chat about this panel discussion that was all about sex exceptionalism. I encouraged, we did it instead of War Room sometime, but if you weren't there, you should listen to that.
I may have. Okay. I've seen so much stuff, and it's right. Just going in one ear
totally
out the other.
All right. All right. Well, we have hit our time, so I want to honor everyone's time. I'm going to remind you again how to save this chat, because there's a lot of good links in there, and you might want to have access to these later. And for the couple of you who said that you don't have access to the chat, I'm going to save this chat, and I'll just send it to you in your email the same way I send you all the other things. So you're going to go to the chat, and the three dots up at the top that say more, you say save chat, and that'll let everybody have access to everything that was in there before. I will see you in two. Thank you, Alex. We really appreciate your time. I love that even though you only focus on Washington, you were able to give me this time, and I just really appreciate it. And I will see the rest of you in a couple of weeks for this conversation with this man, and hopefully I'll get at least one other person from his family to join us. All right. Thanks, everybody. Love you guys.